Good morning, everyone. Welcome back from our little Pesach hiatus. And hopefully, Bez Hashem will get back up and rolling. And we'll continue the shiur now uninterrupted. Bez Hashem. A good Chodesh also, and I appreciate the effort that was made to come, despite the fact that it's a little harder today because it's Rosh Chodesh. In Parsha Shmini, so the Torah speaks about the laws of Kashrus. And I thought that with that in mind, it would be an opportunity to speak a little bit about an area of Kashrus which comes up a lot, and it's very easy to get confused in this area, and that is the laws of Bittul. And when something is nullified, when it is prohibited, food can be nullified, and when it cannot. Everyone is familiar with the idea of 60 times for Bittul B'Shishim, when that applies, when it's necessary, when it does not apply. So these are some of the things I wanted to touch upon today. Because of the fact that I hope to cover a lot of ground, so it wasn't really practical to make a sheet of sources for this year because it's too many places to go to, so it would have been too complicated, so you'll have to trust me on this. But we'll see. If I say something that you don't think is right, you feel free to call me out. The basic concept, we know it's very, in the Torah, there are certain foods that a person is not allowed to eat. We just finished the Yontif of Pesach, which is the most remarkable of all the foods you're not allowed to eat, because chametz is something that's permissible a whole year, and all of a sudden for 8 days becomes a great prohibition. But in general, with the various foods that are usur, that are prohibited, so it's common, not uncommon, that there should be situations where things get mixed together. We have what's called in halacha taruvos, or when it's properly, that's the way it's pronounced in yeshivas, when it's properly pronounced, it's taroves. But the fact of the matter is that when you have very often mixtures of food, a woman is cooking in the kitchen and a child, cooking for Shabbos, and a child runs by holding a cup of milk or something and splashes a little bit in and so forth. And or you could have situations where raw food gets confused, where a person could have something that actually wasn't kosher, that was sitting around for whatever reason, and it got mixed together with things which are. Or you could have situations with dishes and cutlery, where things that need to be kashered get mixed together inadvertently. Excuse me, there was a spoon that needed to be kashered, and the cleaning lady didn't realize and put it back in the drawer. And now the question is, I don't know which one it was, all the spoons look the same. So we will hopefully try to cover all of these points to get some clarity in this matter. The basic law of nullification in the Torah comes from a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, where the Torah tells us, Acharei Rabim Lahatos. Acharei Rabim Lahatos means that we follow, loosely translated, means that we follow the majority. The pasuk specifically is referring to court proceedings when there's a dispute in a court and the judges are themselves not necessarily in agreement. So the Torah tells us that you go by the majority opinion. And from this pasuk, the Chazal broadened a great concept of rov, that we go in the Torah by majority. And therefore, when you have a majority, when you have a group or a mixture of things, and there's a majority and a minority, so we follow the majority. That being the case, the halacha goes so far as to tell us that you could have a mixture of kosher and non-kosher foods, and in such a situation, you say, "So what do I do now? It all got mixed up." Right? And today, it's not as easy for this to happen because of the fact that we have kosher stores and prepackaged food, etc. But it still could happen today. But in the old days, it was certainly more common that you could have a piece of meat and all meat that looks the same, whether it had a shechita or not. It's the same cow's meat. Well, once it's being processed, and once you see it, you can't tell whether it had a shechita or not. So the question is, what happens if food like that gets mixed up? So the halacha is as follows. When you have two items that taste the same, let's say you have several items that taste the same, like pieces of meat. Okay, and for whatever reason, however it happened that you had two pieces of meat from a kosher process, there was a shechita done, etc., and then you have one piece of non-kosher meat that somehow was brought into the situation, and they're all sitting there on the table, and you don't remember which is which. You don't remember which is which, right? My father's father was a shochet back in the old days in Newark, New Jersey in the 1930s. And my father relates that at that time it wasn't like today where you go to the store and you buy prepackaged kosher meat that is ready to cook. All you have to do is take it home, take it out of the package and cook it. But in those days, before Shabbos, commonly women would go to a chicken market, and the chicken market was owned by either irreligious Jews or non-Jews, but they employed a shochet. So there was a shochet that was sitting there, and you'd buy a chicken, a live chicken, and bring it to the shochet, pay him whatever it was, and he would do the shechita and hand it back to you. Right? So theoretically, in such a case, there could be some confusion. You know, you have kosher and non-kosher stuff being processed or, you know, being handled side by side. So the halacha is as follows. If you have a mixture of kosher and non-kosher meat, but it's all the same type of meat, all cow's meat, okay, and you know that there are two pieces that came from a cow that properly underwent the shechita and one that did not, and they're all, somehow they got confused. So the halacha is, based on this pasuk of Achrei Rabim Lahatos, that you are allowed to eat it. You're allowed to eat the meat because of the fact that the kosher outnumbers the non-kosher. The kosher outnumbers the non-kosher. Okay? as long as the non-kosher is not recognizable, right? In other words, you can't tell, it all looks the same. So the halacha is that you're allowed to follow the majority and you're allowed to eat the meat. Now, what exactly, how far does that go? So there are actually a number of opinions that have shown him what that means. But the Ikar HaDin accepted opinion, which is the Shita of the Rajba, the opinion of one of the Gedolei Rishonim, the Rajba, is that really all the meat becomes acceptable. In other words, you had three pieces of meat. Two of them you knew were kosher, and one of them was not. And they got mixed together. The halacha, according to the Rajba, is that you could eat all of them. You could eat all of them. Even one person can eat all of them, so long as he does not eat all of them at the same time. Okay, why should that be? You'll say, isn't that ridiculous? You know for sure that one of the pieces is not kosher. So the answer is because the Torah gives us a guideline that, in the Rajba's view, that when you have a majority, you always have the right to assume that what you have in your hand comes from the majority. So therefore, when you have the three pieces of meat, when you pick up the first one, you say, well, there's a 33% chance that you have the non-kosher meat. But on the other hand, the majority says that this is from the kosher meat, so you're allowed to eat it. And so too, when you pick up the next piece. So again, even though now there are only two pieces left, but you still could say that since in this original mixture there were three pieces, so this is from the majority. And even when you have one piece left, you could also eat it. So therefore it comes out, a remarkable halacha, remarkable, right? That even though you know for sure, there is no question that one of these pieces of meat is not kosher, nevertheless, in the view of the Rajba, one person can eat all three pieces of meat, just not at the same time. If you eat them at the same time, the logic falls away, because the logic is, again, that each one that you have the right to assume comes from the majority, but if you take them all together, so then that doesn't hold, because obviously I have the bad one as well. This is the opinion of the Rajba. Even the same person can eat all of them, but not at the same time. There are other opinions, there's a second opinion, which is more strict, and this opinion we actually do concern ourselves with l'chadchila, and that is that one piece of meat should not be eaten by the same person. In other words, that the same guy can't eat all three. He could eat two of them, but he cannot eat all three of them, but somebody else could eat the third piece of meat. Okay, this is the opinion that's mentioned in the Tosfos and Maseches Chulin. It's also the opinion of the Sefer Mitzvos HaGadol, the Samag, who says that in such a situation, one person can't eat all three of them, even consecutively, but they can all three be eaten as long as it's by two different people. Okay, this is the opinion that l'chatchila we try to follow. So the Ramah says in Simen Kuf Tes that Yuchain Yesh Lino l'chatchila, that l'chatchila, that's what should be done. However, Me'ikar Adin, according to the essential halacha, the halacha follows the first opinion, which is that if it came down to it, and one person ate all of them, he doesn't have to feel bad because of the fact that Me'ikar Adin, we say that each piece you have the right to assume came from the majority. Okay, but l'chatchila we say that one piece should be eaten by somebody else. But still, you have the paradox that all three pieces of meat, including the non-kosher one, are being eaten by Jews. Right? So you'll say, isn't that amazing? You know, for sure, one of them is not kosher. The answer is because the principle in the Torah, one of the remarkable things about the Torah is that the Torah gives guidelines for what you do when you have doubts. Because there are so many mitzvahs and there are so many laws, it's very common that a person should be unclear. It's hard to know exactly what happened. You know, things happen quickly, and especially when something unexpected comes about very often, you didn't realize it. You know, it was an accident. So therefore, yeah, how did a non-kosher piece of meat come in? I don't know. But somehow, that's what happened. Right, and whatever, you know. Now this would apply. This halacha would apply, you know, by meat or any two food items that have the same taste. It doesn't have to be specifically meat. If you had any two food items that have the same taste and they got mixed up, and so long as they did not get blended together, so long as they remain separate, so the halacha would be that if they have the same taste and they have not been blended, this is the concept of bittul barov, that it is considered acceptable to eat it. There is, just for the record, there is a radical lenient opinion of the Rosh, Rabbeinu Rosh, also one of the Gedolei Rishonim, who says that based on the principle of rov, the forbidden food actually becomes converted into kosher food. That it underwent a conversion, it was nepach leheter, that based on the concept of following the majority, that the non-kosher food becomes kosher based on this principle, and therefore it would come out according to him that you could even one person could eat all three pieces at the same time, but that opinion is not followed. So again, the prevailing opinion is that really technically one person can eat all three consecutively, but l'chatchila we say that they should not all be eaten by one person. Yes?
So it's 1-to-1 or better on the kosher side.
Once again?
It has to be 1-to-1 or better on the kosher side.
It has to be 2-to-1. It has to be chad betray. Right? It has to be 2-to-1. As long as it's 2-to-1, 1-to-1 wouldn't be good. Right? 2-to-1 would be good. Okay, if it's 1-to-1, then it's a suffix. A suffix, the right?
It has to be 2/3,
No, simple majority. No. Good point. Simple majority. 51-49. 51-49 is fine. Yeah, I'm just saying with pieces, it's going to come out, obviously.
What if they do get money?
Oh, we'll get to that right now. Okay, so it's a remarkable halacha. And, excuse me, this is based on the fact that when you have doubts, there are certain guidelines that sometimes can overrule in a certain sense, the basic premise. In other words, you say, but there's a non-kosher piece of meat there. It doesn't matter. But what do you do when you have a doubt? When you have a doubt, you're allowed to assume that this is what you have, that you have the good one. So if the Torah allows you to assume that you have the good one, so then you can eat it. You know, very often, you know, little kids will say to themselves, you know, when they first learned the laws of kashrus, I remember as a child, you know, so there's always, you know, the kids who take it very, very seriously. And, you know, it comes up, let's say, with Hechsherim, you know, this one wouldn't eat, they wouldn't trust this, they wouldn't trust that. So they always say that the example they always use is if somebody told you that the glass of water you're about to drink, there was a 1% chance it was poison, would you drink it? Absolutely not. So therefore, you know, on that prayer, you wouldn't drink it even if it was a less than 1% chance. If someone told you there's a definite chance that this is poison, right, you wouldn't drink it. Nevertheless, when it comes to the Surim of the Torah, which from a spiritual sense are poison, That's not the way it goes. And you could end up eating it, and it's permitted to eat it. And if it's permitted to eat it, a person who did it did not violate any law. Right? Doesn't have to do tshuva, doesn't need a kapara. This is the right. He did the right thing. He's allowed to do it. Yeah, yes.
Is there any problem on the other side, like al kashrus of not eating it?
It happens to be that there's a famous statement attributed to the author of the Shnei Luchos HaBris, Shalah. It's quoted in the Pesachei Tshuva that he said that a person who does not rely on this is considered in the category of an apikoros, a heretic. In other words, the Torah said you could do it, so you're more religious than the Torah. However, not everyone agrees to that. There are those who l'chadchila don't rely on bitulim. It is mentioned in Svarim, but the prevailing attitude is that we rely on everyone. It's widely accepted. Yeah, yeah.
But I thought with Trey Fu, even if you do the right thing, you go to a restaurant and check their picture, you're cheating.
Yeah.
You're eating tray food. That you don't get the isser, but you have the spiritual consequence of eating tray food that
isser. Right. So, but it's hard to know. I'll be honest with you. I'm not 100% clear on that myself. It's hard to know when that applies, when it doesn't. Strictly speaking, if a person follows the halacha, and the halacha is clear that in this situation it's permissible, so then it would not have a negative spiritual effect. You know, and the truth is, if a person ate in a place where they were cheating, but the mashgiach said it was good, so we have a law in the Torah, Eidech Adnem and Bisurim, that if a mashgiach tells you it's good, or any God-fearing Jew tells you that he's in the know. Yeah, so I don't know. I know whenever they have these scandals, people get all, you know, bent out of shape. And I'm sure there's something to it. I can't, to be honest with you, totally clarify it. But I think that sometimes people get a little carried away with this. In other words, if according to the Torah you're allowed to eat it, you're allowed to eat it. And therefore a person will come upstairs after 120 years and say, what do you want? I followed what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. So it didn't work out, but the Torah is very clear. The Torah says you're allowed to do this. So in such a situation, it would not have, according to the prevailing opinions, would not have a problem. There are people who are machmir. I acknowledge that. There are some people out there who wouldn't eat this, but that's not the widely accepted practice. Okay, now, so you'll say, well, this being the case, so when do you ever need 60 times? And why should you ever need 60 times? If the Torah says that you have the right to follow the majority, so then if a woman is cooking cholent on a Friday afternoon and the child runs by with ice cream or milk and a little bit splashes out and lands in the cholent pot, so you'll say, what's the problem? Why should there be an issue? Obviously, the majority of the food is meat, so a little dairy fell in. Big deal, right? Big deal. It's not noticeable. You know, if you wait a minute, it's not going to be noticeable. Maybe initially it would be, but if you didn't catch it right away, it immediately gets blended in. And that being the case, there should be no issue at all. Why do you even need 60 times? So the answer to this is based on a principle that we discussed once last year at a shiur on this topic. There is a law in the Torah called Tam Ke'ikr. Tam Ke'ikr means that the Torah accepts that a taste of something is considered a taste alone, even though it has no substance. But the taste itself is considered as if it has substance. So one example of this, we spoke before Pesach, one example would be if you cook in a non-kosher pot, right? So if you have a clean pot that was used, let's say, 5 hours ago, somebody cooked non-kosher food in a pot, and then they put it in the dishwasher and cleaned it out 100% perfectly. You're not allowed to cook in that pot. Why not? Because of the fact that the taste of the non-kosher food has become absorbed into the pot, and the presumption is that that taste will come out into the food that you're cooking. So you'll say, okay, but that's intangible. It has no substance, right? Show me the taste. Can you point to it? You can't. The truth is, people who are into cooking will tell you that this is a fact, that it's true that pots that have been used previously have a different effect than new pots. But the fact is that you can't point to it, you can't hold it, you can't pick it up. Nevertheless, the Torah says that taste has the status as if it's tangible. Now, that being true, if milk were to fall into a meat pot while meat is being cooked, and you could taste the milk even a little bit, that would be a problem, because of the fact that the taste itself has halachic significance. The taste is considered as if it has substance to it. So therefore, the fact that there's a simple majority doesn't help, because you'll say, it's true, you have a majority, but in a certain sense, you don't, because of the fact that I could taste it. So if I could taste it, it's here. I can't point to it, I can't pick it up, but that's the klal in the Torah, tam ki ikar. So this creates a problem. This creates a problem which we did not have in the original scenario. In the original scenario where you had three pieces of meat that were side by side that did not blend together, so the taste of the non-kosher meat was never imparted into the kosher meat. So you don't have a problem like that. So therefore the only issue is that one piece is no good. Which piece is it? Okay, but here you have a bigger problem because of the fact that the taste of the non-kosher is in the kosher, and now that makes it that it has substance. So there is no majority. So, yes?
In the first case, if one of the pieces of meat, let's say, had a little bit different taste, then you wouldn't be able to.
Oh, we'll get to that. We'll get to if it has a little different taste. Hold on. We'll soon see. Right, but for right now, the truth is, even if it had a little different taste, so what? But it didn't get mixed with the other thing. It didn't get mixed together with the... In other words, when you have three pieces of raw meat side by side, and somehow they got mixed together and one of them is not kosher, no taste was transferred. So if no taste was transferred, then you go by the simple majority. But there is no majority when they got mixed together in such a way that the taste now extended to the other food, because there is no majority anymore because of this principle of Tom Kicker. You have no majority. Show me the majority where I can taste it. So if I can taste it, it's here. So there is no rove like that. So in such a case, the halacha is, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Chulin, that what's needed in order for this to be edible is the taste itself has to be nullified. And therefore, a mixture like that would be prohibited so long as it is what the Gemara refers to as binosein tam. So long as the mixture is small enough that the unkosher had an impact, had an effect taste-wise on the kosher, you have a problem. Okay, so technically, therefore, it would really depend on how much of a mixture it was. Obviously, if a small drop of meat got mixed into a commercial chong pot that was being cooked for 1,000 people in a hotel, right, so you'll say, so, you know, then even this is way more, of course the taste isn't going to be noticeable. On the other hand, if it was a very small pot, or maybe it wasn't the chalent, it was something else that was being cooked, so then, you know, it should really depend on how much kosher food there was in relation to the non-kosher, or how much meat there was in relation to the milk. So because it's hard to put, you know, a number on this, and what are you going to do? You can't taste it yourself. Because of the, in other words, technically, if you had a taste test, if you gave it to somebody to taste and said, tell me, can you taste the milk? Okay, you want to have some chalent? It's before Shabbos. People like to get a little sneak preview of the chalent before Shabbos, right? But here, some milk splashed into it. So you'll say, here, taste it and tell me if it's good. But who could you give it to? You can't give it to a Jew because it may not be acceptable. So the Gemara says that you could give it to a non-Jew, but don't tell him that you need to know that for halacha. Just tell them that you're curious to know what the taste is. But so technically that could be done. However, the Ramah tells us that we don't rely on it. We don't do this anymore in our times. So the Chazal came up with a safe number. The Chazal came up with a safe number, which is shishim, 60 times. That if there is 60 times the amount of acceptable versus the amount of unacceptable, it is presumed that you can't taste it. It's presumed that you can't taste it, okay? Now, again, in reality, you could say, but I think that with this type of thing, you know, let's say, for example, with skim milk, which in my opinion has no taste ever, right? So it got mixed in, and my wife doesn't agree, but it gets mixed into the food, so you'll say, well, even if it had 20 times the amount, I couldn't taste it. That may be true, but because of the fact that we can't start getting into this nitty-gritty, technical, you know, tasting it out, so therefore the number that is accepted is shishim. Okay? And therefore, if you have 60 times the amount, you could eat it. If you don't have 60 times the amount, you can't eat it. And obviously, a person has to try to assess, you know, the situation. Obviously, there are many halachas attached to this. It's just an overview. right? It gets a little more complicated if you use a non-kosher pot, because the question is how much taste is in the walls of the pot. And because we don't know that, we are machmir that you have to assume it's the entire circumference of the pot. But so there are a lot of ins and outs if this actually happens. But in a simple situation where you have a little milk that got mixed into meat or vice versa, right? So in a situation like that, if you have 60 times, it's acceptable. You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, it's 60, 160 or less, then you disregard any taste.
If it's, I'm sorry?
If it's 160 or less,
yes.
You disregard the taste.
If it's 160 or less, you just can't eat it. You can't. Yeah, that's it. You can't eat it. So what?
No, it's less. It's 160th, 170th, whatever.
It's more. It's more than 60.
No, it's less than within the wall.
Yeah.
But there's still a taste.
Oh. So if it's a the assumption is that there won't be. If you had a very, very sharp food that you could still taste, even then, that would not be bottled. It's not common for that to happen. But technically that's true. If you had something that was very, very strong, then it wouldn't be. Okay, this is the halacha when it comes to things that were blended together and have different tastes. Okay, so now, just to put things in the context, okay, so therefore you have two scenarios. You have scenarios where you have items that were not blended together, and then you have scenarios of items that were blended together. But when they were blended together, the only time it would be an issue, really, is if they had different tastes. Because if they had the same taste, you would never taste it anyway. Right? In other words, if you had, theoretically, milk that tasted like cholent, okay, and that spilled into the cholent, so then you wouldn't taste it, no matter how much milk was in there. So theoretically, then, that should not be a problem. Because the whole problem is if you can taste. Right, somebody told me that in Eretz Yisrael, maybe you could verify this, they had Ben & Jerry's ice cream produced Charosis flavored ice cream for Pesach. True?
I didn't know.
Okay, that's what I heard. Okay, so let's say they had, milk that tasted like cholent. Okay, it fell into the cholent, so technically you wouldn't need this 60 times. However, the Rabbanon came and made a very big chumrah, which is that any time foods get blended together, whether they have the same taste or not, you always need shishim. The reason for this is because they were afraid that a person get mixed up in the halacha and will not distinguish between similar taste and dissimilar taste. And therefore, they said, even if it has similar taste, you need shishim. And not only that, but they said, even when it's not blended together, but if you have a mixture of food that does not have similar taste, but there is what's called yavish b'yavish, it's all dry, it hasn't been blended together. Let's say, for example, you had items that were so ground up so finely that you couldn't see what it was. You couldn't see what it was, but they have dissimilar tastes, and one is kosher, one is not kosher, but they haven't been mixed together. So the halacha is, that also needs 60 times. Because of the fact that anything that's one step away from the Torah prohibition needs it. So that doesn't happen that often. So basically, as it translates to us, the way it comes out is that any time food has been mixed together or cooked together, whether or not it has a similar taste or not, you would need 60 times the amount to nullify it. Okay, if they were dissimilar tastes, you would need 60 times midaraisa. If they were similar tastes, you'd need 60 times midarabana, but it doesn't matter. For all intents and purposes, you'd need 60 times. You would need 60 times the amount. Okay? Yes.
This rule applies only to the.
What you mean, l'chachila? Can you do this?
Yeah,
right. I'll get that. We'll get that. No, you cannot. Correct. You cannot do that. Okay. We'll soon see. Okay. So now that being the case, this is what we're familiar with. Okay. So therefore, when something happens, a question comes up in a person's kitchen, which happens from time to time, even in the best of circumstances, it's nobody's fault. it happens in an active kitchen. This is going to happen. So the halacha is that if it's 60 times the amount, you could eat it. You could eat it. However, there are certain situations that we don't say, where we say that something is not batel b'shishim, and that's really was the topic of today's shir, which I would like to speak about. There are certain situations where even if you have 60 times the amount, it's not nullified. Okay, some of them are more common than others, but one of them, we just had, with Pesach, right? Because we know the halacha is that chametz on Pesach is not bottle at all. Okay, before Pesach, chametz is bottle. If a woman is cooking before Pesach, and somehow there became a confusion, a mixture where some chametz actually got into cooked food that she was making for Pesach. So the halacha is that before Pesach, we say that it's bottle b'shishin. Right, we say that it would be nullified with 60 times the amount. This is true not just before Pesach, but it's true even Erev Pesach. It's true even Erev Pesach after the Zman Isser. It's true all the way up until Pesach begins. Okay, that there would be a din of Bittul B'shishim in such a case. However, once Pesach starts, it's over. Okay, once Pesach starts, then if even one drop of chametz fell into an entire pot of Pesach food, you cannot eat it. It's not bottle. Right? There's a very, very strict rule that we have when it comes to Pesach. Now, why should that be? You'll say, what do you mean? But the Torah says that things are bottle, so it should be bottle here too. What's the difference? Right? So one reason which is given, but the Rambam famously gives this reason, and this brings to light a concept, that there is something that's called a Dover Sheyesh Lo Matirin. A davar sheyesh lo matirin means an item that is prohibited, but it's only prohibited for a certain period of time. Eventually, it's going to be permissible. So the halacha is, when you have something like that, that is not batal, even if you have 60 times the amount. Okay, so therefore, chametz, when it comes to Pesach, chametz, you can't eat it on Pesach, but you could eat it after Pesach. So therefore, chametz, according to the Rambam, chametz is not batal at all. But this rule wouldn't just be true about the chametz on Pesach. The concept would be true the entire year. So, for example, let's say you had chodosh, right? Something which you knew, right, grain that grows during the year is prohibited, according to everybody, until the second day of Pesach, right? That's called chodosh. A person is not allowed to eat chodosh. You can only eat yashan, right? Now you say, what do you mean? But I don't eat yashan. Yashan is only the certain people do. So, as we once mentioned, that means certified yashan, guaranteed yashan. In other words, the people who only eat things that are stamped yashan, that means that they have tracked it, and they are absolutely certain that this grain is from last year. Okay, however, what happens if you're not sure? So, the poskim say, a very famous halacha stated in the Taz, who says that there is, based on the concept of spek sveka, based on the fact that there are numerous doubts involved, which we once years ago spoke about, a person could be lenient even if you don't know it's certified. Okay, so which is what most people rely on, right? In other words, most people don't eat. I'm not saying you shouldn't, but most people are not careful with that. So the halacha is you're allowed to eat it. Okay, but if you know for sure that what you have, is chadash, if you know for sure, then you can't eat it no matter who you are. Even if you're not one of those guys that has to see the Yashan sign on it, it doesn't matter. This you can't eat because I know for sure it's prohibited. So now let's say that food gets mixed in to kosher food, to acceptable food. So you'll say, well, okay, I can't eat it, but I have 60 times the amount. But on the other hand, this is a davar sheyesh lo matirin. This is something that's prohibited only for a period of time. Because once Pesach comes, it's going to be permissible. Right now, this is the best time of the year. All the Yashan people right now are relaxed. They're not nervous because it's after Pesach. So there's no chance in the world that if you go to the store to buy Ranzoni's noodles, that it's chadash because it cannot possibly have grown since Pesach and be on the shelf. Right? They don't process it that quickly. So therefore, anything that you go to the store now you could eat, there's no problem, right? So because of that, even had it happened before Pesach, but if it got mixed in, even if it got mixed in 60 times, you would not be allowed to eat it because this is what's called a davar sheyesh lo matirin. Okay, that is something which is considered something which will be permissible eventually. Now, this concept of a davar sheyesh lo matirin applies in an interesting way when it comes to kalim, when it comes to dishes. Because what happens, as I mentioned at the outset, if a person knows that they had a spoon in their kitchen that it became what we would say, it became treif, right? By accident, somebody put a dairy spoon into a meat pot while it was being cooked, while it was boiling hot, So, all right, fine, you know, the spoon needs to be kashered. So you put it aside, and you say, you know, I'll eventually kasher it, I don't have time to do it right now. So then you go away, and the cleaning lady comes into the house and sees the spoon lying around and throws it into the drawer. So now you say, when you come back and you say, what happened to that spoon? You say, you know, whatever, you know, what happened to that spoon? She said, well, I put it back in the drawer. All the spoons look the same. So you'll say, so what do I do now? I have one bona fide non-kosher spoon sitting in my drawer with many kosher spoons. So applying what we learned until now, you'll say that shouldn't be a problem because these are things which are not blended together and therefore they should be batel berov, right? Because of the fact taste has not been imparted. They're cold, dry spoons. Okay, so no taste has been imparted. So as long as I have a majority of kosher spoons, it should be no problem. I should be able to use them, and that would be the logical argument. However, one could say, but 1 minute. But since there is a way to rectify a non-kosher spoon, that is by kashering it. So therefore, that should be analogous to something, to a food which has a point in time that it's going to be permissible. In other words, what we've said is that the laws of nullification don't apply by something which will become permissible eventually. So let's say chametz on Pesach, it'll become permissible after Pesach. Or let's say chadash, it'll become permissible after Pesach. So even though this has no time frame attached to it, but there's a different means through which it becomes permissible, namely through kashering it. So since I could kasher it and make it permissible, it shouldn't be batel. This is the question which is discussed very seriously amongst the poskim. So, yes?
In one case, you have to actually do something.
Right, okay. So, one case, okay.
In the other case, automatically.
Fine. So, the Ramah in the Shulchan Aruch says, based on playing on that idea, the Ramah says that, not just that alone, but he says here, when it comes to the kashering it, you have to actually do something. But more than that, is that kashering is not such a simple process, and sometimes it could be costly. Not sure exactly what he means, but it's not such a simple thing, and therefore that's not called a davar she'yesh lo matirin. In other words, it would only be true by something that automatically, poof, you know, becomes mutter. But once there's a process involved, it's a pain to do it, whatever you want to call it, right? It's annoying to do it. So therefore, the Ramah says that's fine, and therefore would be permissible. However, the Shach strongly disagrees with the Ramah, and he says that he doesn't really understand why that's true. He said, what's the big deal? You kasher it, doesn't hurt anybody. Okay, so therefore, he says compromise. He says, he'll say, now if you take the strict opinion here, that means now you have to take all your spoons and kasher it. In other words, think about that, right? If this spoon that is now sitting amongst 20 other spoons in your drawer is not batel, that means that you would have to take all 20 spoons and kasher them. So says the Shach that we could come to a middle ground. And that is that if you let it sit without using it for 24 hours, right? So as we'll mention soon, something that sits for 24 hours, the taste that has been absorbed is considered an unsatisfactory taste, and therefore that taste really cannot render something not kosher. So therefore, says the Shach, that in that situation, that's what the person should do. Now, as according to the Ramah, you can just forget the whole thing and use them all immediately. But we are machmer like the Shach. The Shach says that the best thing to do would be don't use any of the spoons for 24 hours, and then at that point, you could use them all, you don't have to kasher. That's what we hold. Okay, so that would be an example of a davar she'yesh lo matirin. Yes?
You're in a commercial setting where you have more than 100 spoons.
Right.
There's still no
bottle. Yeah, because there's no vitali and b'shishim. Right, right. Dav she'yesh lo matirin is not bottle even be'elef. Right, that's right. Okay, now, the next thing that is not bottle.
Even a Thomas that's in the spoon would be bottle and b'shishim in the kelim.
Would be bottle and b'shishim in the kelim. Yeah.
The actual trade Tom doesn't have matirin.
The actual tom doesn't have matir, but the spoon has matir, right?
And therefore, the actual trade of tom would be theoretically butthole in the 60 spoons.
Who said, someone says that?
I've had this story.
You've had this, okay. I'm not familiar with that. Okay, yeah, could be, yeah, yes.
What is the concept of putting a utensil on the ground for 24 hours?
That's in the itza. That's for a different thing. That's if it had, like, in case it had, like, fat, a knife that had something, some fat absorbed on the knife itself. That's a different thing. That's a right. But that we're talking here about if it got that wouldn't help if it got cooked in. That wouldn't help. It wouldn't help. Okay. Now the next thing which comes up commonly, which is not batel even b'shishim, and this is a killer, is what is halachically called a beria. A beria means an entire entity, an entire creature, okay, which means that if an ant falls into a pot of food, okay, a whole ant, all right, so, you know, the old joke is what's worse than if a whole ant falls in, if half an ant, but the person who said that didn't know Yeridea. Because if he knew halacha, he would say that it's much better if a half an ant fell in, because a half an ant would be butler, right? Assuming he can't notice it, right? Which usually in a pot of food, you wouldn't be able to see it. But if an entire bug fell in, this would not be nullified no matter how much you had. Unless you could locate it and take it out. If you locate it and take it out, then the only problem you have is the taste that was imparted. And that wouldn't be a problem, at least because it's batel b'shishim, possibly for other reasons also. Yeah, yeah.
What if it falls into hot coffee?
Yes, so it would be the same thing. I mean, it could be in a hot cup of coffee, the chlal, you could see it. I don't know. But
I mean, but I'm not talking about whether you can see it or not. There's some parts it's cooking in there.
Yeah. But I'm saying, if you have 60, you know, everyone has...
Right.
Everyone has their own personal threshold of what they would eat and what they wouldn't. You know, the old waiter, there's a fly in my soup, right, problem. So okay, you have to, you know, that. As far as personal squeamishness, that's a different question. But this is a real problem. So therefore, when cooking, you have to be very careful, you know, if there's an insect problem or if there are flies, you know, in the place where the food is being cooked, you have to be careful, because that could really pose a problem. Now, should this happen, potentially there could be ways to deal with it. So a person should not throw out the food without consulting a rav who is knowledgeable in this. But you know, it in itself, it's a serious problem, and people don't realize this. You know, what's the big deal? You know, I won't tell my wife. You know, what you don't know can't hurt you. Yeah, that's all fine and good, but a beria is not bottled. Yeah, yes.
Two things. One, Tom does not apply by Shrutzen.
Right.
So that's what
correct.
And also, if it's resic, right, so it's all broken up and everything.
Yes.
So in that case,
that's different.
Right. So the Kibbutz Gadol says, based on the shach, that it's only applies if it's a cook, that this type of cooked vegetable for sure is infested. Then
right.
If it's not muksuk.
Okay, so I didn't want to get involved with that, but okay, so I'm talking about Stam in a kitchen where this happens. Now, it's true that this question comes up more if you put in a vegetable that really should have been checked, and you didn't check it, and now you have oh my gosh, you know, I didn't check it, and there could be a bug in there, and if there is, I'm in trouble. Okay, so whatever. I'm just saying, if this happens, you have to be careful. Okay?
Yes.
There are no ants in the coffee, Baruch Hashem. Okay, and hopefully in Krispy Kreme there aren't any either. Okay, the next thing is that's not batel would be the other cases which are not batel are cases which, because it's prominent, it's not batel. Something which is prominent is not considered nullified, so therefore you have something called a chaticha aruy l'schabed. If you have a piece of meat that's large enough that you would serve it to a guest, so that type of thing, even if it got mixed in with a tremendous amount of other meat, would not be batel. So if a non-kosher steak got thrown into a pot together with kosher steaks, even if you had 100 times the amount, it would not be batel because of the fact that this is called a chaticha arui l'schabed. This does not, to my knowledge, commonly happen in the average kitchen. And another thing, there are others, but I'm just picking the main ones. Another thing which would not be batel would be what's called a davar shebeminyan. A davar shebeminyan means something which is sold by quantity. Okay, not that it's a package of rice, but let's say eggs. Eggs are sold by quantity. You have a dozen eggs. Okay, so therefore each egg is considered a davar chashuv. Right, when you buy a package of rice, you don't start measuring how much rice is in there. Right, you trust them and that's it. But a lot of people, when they shop, when they go to the egg section, they open it up to see if there are any cracked ones because of the fact that every egg matters. I don't want to buy broken eggs. I want a dozen eggs. So therefore, each egg has its own significance. Therefore, if you had an egg of a non-kosher bird that got mixed in together, that would not be batel because in other words, the concept is that because it's prominent, it can't be considered nullified. Okay, now, moving right along, I'm watching the clock here, it's getting late. So just a question which comes up would be, what happens if something was nullified originally, but then more isser fell in? In other words, let's say you're having a really rough day in the kitchen. Okay, so the child runs by the chong pot, and milk splashes into the pot, and you say, no problem, I have 60 times the amount. But this kid did not learn the lesson. Or then the brother, the sister come by with their milk, and more milk splashes in, and now you're not sure anymore. If you count the original milk, I don't have 60 times the amount. Or do we say that the original milk is already gone, and therefore it's nullified, and therefore it doesn't matter what happened now? So this is a question in halacha that's called chozer v'nir, that whether something which is nullified can, I guess loosely you would translate, can come back to life. And the answer is yes, it can. It can. In other words, something that is nullified, b'shishim, is considered dormant. It is not considered non-existent. Okay, so therefore, if more comes in, you have a problem. Okay, the flip side, what happens if originally it wasn't batel and now somebody put in more kosher stuff? So now I didn't have 60 originally, but now I do have 60. Okay, so the halacha is, that's also no good. In other words, because once it was no good, so the whole, this already gets complicated, but now the whole mixture is considered no good. So now you need 60 times everything. So if something was not batel, generally speaking, it wouldn't help if even more permissible food got mixed in. Which brings us to the final issue, which is that can you go ahead and be mevatel something l'chatchila? If a person says, I'll pour a little milk into my chont, and I'll have 60 times the amount anyway, so it's no problem. So the halacha is, the Chazal were very strict here, the Shulchan Aruch says very clearly, ein mevatlin isul chatchila, a person is not allowed to do such a thing, and if the person did, the rabbis made a penalty that you can't eat it. That person can't eat it, the person, if it was cooked for somebody else, that person also can't eat it. Okay, a total outsider, however, can eat it. Okay, in other words, if the person who nullified it gets no benefit from it, because it was just left, he walked away, he can't eat it. So now some other Jew says, hey, look at this, there's some food, that's hefker, he would be allowed to eat it, because it wasn't done for him. Okay, and that's the way it remains. This is only when it was done intentionally. If it was done unintentionally, then it would be permissible, and therefore that sometimes happens, that it was unintentional. Now what happens if the person who did it doesn't know the halacha? If the person who did it doesn't know the halacha, that's also considered unintentional. This comes up in kashrus with some items that goyim, you know, in a non-kosher factory, that they're producing an item where they are mevatel isurim. In other words, that there could be a non-kosher ingredient. Right? If you look at the ingredients, if 1% of the ingredient is non-kosher, theoretically you should be able to eat it, because 1% is not 60 times. Right? If it was 2%, that's too much, because 2% is 1/50th, right? But if it's 1% or 1.5%, that would be okay, right? So theoretically, if that happened in a non-kosher plant where they take something which isn't kosher and I'm a vatel it, so you'll say, well, that should be good because they don't know the halacha, right? But as to my knowledge, the kashrus agencies don't accept that. The OU, I'm quite certain, does not accept that.
Is it because it's put in purposely?
The goyim did it purposely.
Right.
Right, but they don't care what the halacha. They're doing it for their own reasons. They, you know, whatever reason they're doing it. Yes.
I'm saying by talayim, so whether you have jams or whether you have pureed fruit juices,
right.
So there, since the focus is not on the bugs,
right.
You're just trying to do the fruit juices. So the fact that there could be the risk of the
right,
bugs.
I think
so that's so that the halakha should say it's fine because this halacha doesn't apply that you're being mevatel when the focus is not.
Right.
On
okay.
The actual,
okay. It's probably also because of suffix.
On the actual food, it's, you know,
fine. Okay, it comes up. Yes, that's true. That's okay. Okay, fine. And just excuse me. Last but not least, we mentioned earlier, if something is an unsatisfactory taste, that doesn't hurt you. So therefore, if a pot was more than 24 hours old and it was inadvertently used and it had been used for non-kosher, it would not make the food not kosher, but l'chatchila, you can't use such a pot. That's why we don't just take pots and use them indiscriminately, right? You would have to, l'chatchila, you cannot use such a pot, but if you had that would also be acceptable. Okay, yeshukai.